2. In a galaxy fraught with wonders, the convergence of columnar tree trunks and forking branches that supported the Wookiee city of Urwukrora enjoyed a place of special honor. Viewed from above against its backdrop of fathomless forest, the city appeared to have been rescued from the planet's harsh underworld and submitted to Kashi Eek's scudded sky as an example of nature and technology in consummate poise. At the outskirts of the city, distant from the circular buildings that rose from its spongy floor and scaled the trunks of the giant trees themselves, atop a massive fallen branch that spanned several treetops, a ceremony was in progress, enacted in observance of nature's timeless cycle of life and death. The participants, including 24 Wookiees and humans of both sexes, were arranged in a loose circle around a wooden table that happened also to be circular. Some stood, others sat on their haunches or on the ground, but all wore solemn expressions. Save for the group's only non-living members, the droids C-3PO and R2-D2, whose alloy countenances remained, in all circumstances, essentially neutral. C-3PO stood with his bulbous head tilted slightly to one side and his arms bent at angles rarely adopted by the life form after which he had been modeled. To the droid, the rigid posture seemed entirely natural, a consequence of the way he was put together and the ever-changing demands of the servo motors that permitted him to gesticulate and move about. Beside him, R2-D2 stood still as a fixture. Locomotion struts planted firmly on the fallen Roshir tree branch and centered tread retracted. In passing, C-3PO noted that the view from the fallen branch was really quite extraordinary. Fog was thick in the treetops, concealing the nearest of the Wookiee nursery rings and diffusing the morning light as might a prism. The view could even be said, though certainly not by him, to be breathtaking. "We gather in the memory of Chewbacca, honorable son, beloved mate, devoted father, loyal friend and comrade in arms, champion and clan uncle to all of us in spirit, if not in the traditional way." The Wookiee speaker was called Ralrachin, though C-3PO had often heard him referred to simply as Ralra. He was tall and aged, even for his arboreal species, but it wasn't the graying muzzle that distinguished him so much as his curious speech impediment. On any other occasion, C-3PO would have been tasked to serve as translator and interpreter, but none of the humans present had need of his polyglot faculties that particular morning. "In Chewbacca, the defiant flame burned brightest," Ralra went on, black nose twitching and long arms dangling at his sides. "On Kashi Eek or far afield on distant worlds, he was never less than courageous and incorruptible. A Wookiee with heart enough for 10 and eager strength enough for 50. Chewbacca had died 6 standard months earlier during an ill-fated rescue attempt on the planet Cernpadal, after it had been targeted for destruction by the Yuuzhan Vong. The fact that it hadn't been possible to retrieve his body was a source of sorrow to all, for had Chewbacca been returned to Kashi Eek, a funeral would have been held, though for honor family members only. What Wookiees did with their dead remained a closely guarded secret. Some experts speculated that the dead were cremated. Others that they were either buried within tree knots or lowered by Kashi'i vines into the murky depths from which the species had risen. Still others claimed that the dead were hacked to pieces with sacred re'ek blades and scattered on select Roshir branches to be carried off by predatory Katarns or Kroyi birds. C-3PO understood that he may not have been allowed to attend the funeral in any case. Everyone attending the memorial was a member of Chewbacca's extended family, but it was unlikely that the affiliation applied to him, much less to his counterpart R2-D2. for all their espousal to machines, intelligent and otherwise, flesh and bloods could be extremely proprietary about matters of kinship and family. Close to Ralra squatted Chewbacca's father, a Titchit Cuck, along with Chewbacca's auburn-furred sister, Calibo. Alongside them sat Chewbacca's widow, Mala Tobuk, and their son, Lumpawarump, who had taken the name Lumpawaru, Waru for short, on the successful completion of his rite of passage. Interspersed among the Wookiee contingent stood assorted friends, kin-brothers, cousins, nieces, and nephews. Lobaka among the latter, a Jedi Knight. The humans numbered only six, Master Luke, Mistress Leia, Master Han, and the three Solo offspring, Anakin, Jason, and Jaina. Conspicuously absent was Lando Calrissian, who, much to Master Han's disquiet, had sent word that unexpected and unspecified developments would prevent his attending. Master Luke's wife, Mara, might have attended if a sudden relapse in her mysterious malady hadn't forced her to remain on Coruscant. The exquisitely carved table at the center of the circle rested on a carpet of Rochere tree leaves, its pedestal base entwined with dark green kashi'i vines, and its round top strewn with calvish blossoms, wasaka berries, orga root, and the glossy yellow petals of the sirin plant. The cool air was redolent with the aroma of smoldering tree resin incense. Here on Kashyyyk, Chewbacca's mettle made itself known at an early age, Ralra continued. With his late friend, Sal Porin. He paused to glance at Sal Porin's widow, Gorlin. Chewbacca left the nursery ring to venture down along the Ryat Trail to the Well of the Dead, in the heart of the Shadow Forest. Armed only with the Re'ek blade, he braved Mach Shear, Jaddock Moss, Needlebug, Trap Spinner, and Shadow Keeper to harvest strands from the heart of the flesh-eating Sirin, thus earning the right to wear a baldric, carry a weapon, and confirm the name he chose to be known by. Here, too, Chewbacca ventured into the great Anarid Pit. Not once or even twice, but five times, taking down the taloned Katarn on three of those hunts, and once receiving a wound from the beast in return. Ralra indicated a spot on his shaggy torso, here on the left side of his chest. In preparation for his marriage, which took place atop this very branch, Chewbacca descended to the fifth level, and there, with bare hands, captured a Quillerot and presented it to Mala as an expression of his love. And when it came time for Waru's initiation, Chewbacca was steadfast in his support and encouraging of his son's quest of the Scuttle Grazer. While some of Chewbacca's accomplishments on his home world were familiar to C-3PO, his memory lacked anything in the way of corroborative data. So he summoned recollections of his own experiences with the Wookiee, and was immediately inundated with a rapid-fire sequence of images, some of them dating back 25 standard years. His first sight of Chewbacca, standing like a cinnamon-colored tower outside Docking Bay 94, in the Mos Eisley spaceport on Tatooine. Chewbacca as a sore loser in Djarik Holoboard contests. Chewbacca on Bespin's Cloud City, incorrectly reattaching C-3PO's head after it had been used by Ugnaughts as a plaything in a game of Wookiee in the Middle. Master Han's assertion that Chewbacca was always thinking with his stomach. The many, many times Chewbacca was referred to as flea-bitten furball, overgrown mophead, walking carpet, or noisy brute, occasionally by C-3PO himself, in imitation of humans, of course, and always with affection, given Chewbacca's scrupulous character and great size. A sudden flutter gripped C-3PO, and he found that he was unable to summon additional recollections. An unnatural and most discomforting heat surged through his circuitry, prompting him to run a diagnostic program, which ultimately left the source of the glitch unrevealed. Ralra woofed, brayed, and barked. Natural curiosity compelled Chewbacca to leave Kashyyyk at an early age, but like all of us, he was soon enslaved by the Empire. Fortunately, Chewbacca regained his freedom at the hands of a man of like strength and honor, our revered brother, Han Solo, and in the company of Han Solo, to whom he had pledged his life, Chewbacca was to play a crucial role in the rebellion, and in the events that led eventually to the downfall of Emperor Palpatine. C-3PO focused his photoreceptors on Master Han, whose eyes were red-rimmed and narrowed, and whose right hand Mistress Jaina had taken between her own. The dark blue military-style trousers Master Han was wearing were similar to the tattered pair he had attempted to preserve for posterity, but which only the previous day had proved incapable of conforming to Master Han's slightly increased waistline and had torn irreparably. Present during the incident, the cause of no small measure of vexation to Master Han, C-3PO had assisted in affixing to the outside seams of the replacement trousers twin embellishments known as Corellian blood stripes. Across from the father and daughter stood Master Jason and Mistress Leia, her head resting on her elder son's shoulder and her cheeks glistening with tears. Near them squatted Master Anakin, brooding and withdrawn, along with Master Luke, certainly no stranger to death, having lost both his natural and adoptive parents, as well as Obi-Wan Kenobi and Yoda, two of his Jedi mentors. Chewbacca went on to become a soldier in the New Republic. Ralra boomed and rumbled. He aided in Kashyyyk's liberation after the Battle of Endor, but he remained first and foremost devoted to Han Solo, as friend and indebted protector, and as guardian to Han Solo's spouse and three children. Ralra turned to Han. It was Chewbacca's honor to have been able to come to his friend's rescue on several occasions, even as recently as the crisis involving the Yavitha, when he freed Han Solo from imprisonment aboard a Yavithan warship. Once more C-3PO tightened the focus of his photoreceptors on Master Han, who lowered his head in abject grief as Jaina stroked his shoulders. Master Han's relationship with Chewbacca was similar to C-3PO's with R2-D2, though it seemed at times that the two droids had been together even longer than had the human and the Wookiee. R2-D2 must have been regarding Master Han as well, for the astromech suddenly rotated his monocular receptor to C-3PO and warbled tremulously, almost as if he, too, had picked up an enigmatic flutter. C-3PO changed the cant of his head. The past several months had afforded ample opportunities to study humans in grief, but for all his observations, he was no closer to understanding the process than he had been before Chewbacca's death on that dreadful world. All living beings eventually died, when not from the effects of age, then as the result of accidents or illnesses almost too myriad to catalog. Death was in some ways analogous to deactivation or memory erasure, but in fact it was something quite different, a total ceasing to be, the end to all adventuring indeed. In the face of that revelation, C-3PO felt compelled to wonder if he hadn't been wrong all along about his lot in life. If, as he so often declared, droids were made to suffer, what then of flesh and bloods? Perhaps it was better not to know. As constructed, C-3PO was incapable of shedding tears or enduring heartbreak, as it was called, but his programming did allow him to experience sorrow of a sort, if not nearly to the depth experienced by humans and other living beings. And it was suddenly clear that sorrow was the source of the flutter that continued to plague him. Try as he might, he could not summon a sound thought, and with each glance at Master Han, his dismay increased. As the one closest to Chewbacca, and perhaps because he was a very human being, Master Han seemed to be suffering the most, alternating between anguish and rage, despondency and agitation. The man C-3PO had once dismissed as impossible was now deeply distraught, as unreachable as if he were encased in carbonite, and there seemed nothing C-3PO could do to put the matter right. Being fluent in millions of forms of communication did not guarantee an understanding of human behavior, let alone human emotions. C-3PO was only a droid, after all, and not very knowledgeable about such things. There had been an incident during Master Han's courtship of then-Princess Leia, when Master Han had had occasion to place a hand on C-3PO's arm and say, "You're a good droid, 3PO. There's not many droids I like as much as I like you." He had gone on to ask C-3PO's advice on matters of the heart, and C-3PO had gladly provided a poem for Master Han to use as ammunition in his contest with Prince Isolde for the princess's hand. But curse my metal body, C-3PO said to himself, why hadn't his maker equipped him with the necessary programming to come to Master Han's aid now? Instead, all he could offer was mindless philosophizing. Adventure is as alluring and potentially dangerous a thing as the heart of the Siren plant, Ral-Ra roared plaintively. But even Chewbacca's final act was one of sacrifice, giving his life to save someone dear to him. The aged Wookiee looked at young Anakin, then at Master Han and Mistress Leia. And as ever, he kept his claws retracted in battle. Now, in the same way, the branches of the Rozier seek out and support one another. Chewbacca's spirit merges with and gives sustenance to our own, strengthening us for the challenges we have yet to confront. Warfare had figured in C-3PO's existence for so long that a new invasion shouldn't have come as a surprise. But there was something different about the Yuuzhan Vong and the harrowing war they were waging on a galactic scale. It wasn't merely that they didn't distinguish among species or among worlds, New Republic, Imperial Remnant, or Non-Aligned, or even that their biotic warships and weapons packed such awesome destructive power. What worried C-3PO most was that this most recent conflict was one in which not even droids were spared, and that meant that, like it or not, he might yet arrive at a true understanding of grief and death. The circular table was covered with foodstuffs, bowls of zatchabic broth, barbecued chakern ribs, forest honey cakes, salad garnished with rilrin seeds, and flasks of wines, juices, and liquors. Humans and Wookiees were conversing in groups, recounting tales of Chewbacca's exploits that brought laughter, tears, or moments of sober reflection. The breeze had picked up, stirring leaves and enlivening wind chimes. Han sat dejectedly on a short-legged wooden stool, resting his elbows on his knees. "You know, I never thought I'd hear myself say this, but I think I actually envy 3PO. Jaina followed her father's gaze to where the droid was standing with his squat counterpart, looking completely at a loss.
"It's better not to have a heart, you mean?"
"At times like this, anyway." Han exhaled wearily and ran his right hand down over his face. Jaina motioned to the table.
"Let me get you something to eat, Dad. You must be starved."
He managed a smile. "Thanks, sweetie, but I'm not hungry."
"You should have something anyway," she said in a maternal way.
Han brightened slightly and reached for her hand.
"You help yourself. I'm fine."
She frowned.
"Are you sure?"
"Positive." He gestured with his chin. "Get going. Eat enough for the both of us." Reluctantly, Jaina headed for the table. Han watched her for a long moment as she mingled with her siblings, Luke and Lobaka. Observing them, he wondered what he might do if he could use the Force the way the Jedi did.
Would he remain on the light side, or would he avail himself of the sinister powers of the dark side to teach the Yuuzhan Vong a thing or two about vengeance? Violent and ghastly images blossomed in his mind like explosions, but he put a quick end to them. He had had months of such images already, and they had come to nothing. No amount of vengeful thinking was going to bring Chewie back. He glanced at his hands and found them balled into fists. While he'd spent the past 6 months isolated and incapacitated, often in the dark or secreted inside a tap calf on Coruscant, the Jedi had at least been taking the fight to the enemy, and that was exactly what he needed to do. He berated himself silently, then took a deep breath and blew it out through pursed lips. Loosening his hands, he slapped his thighs in a gesture of finality and got to his feet. He was starting out for the table when Mala Tobuk and several other members of Chewbacca's family approached him. Mala was cradling a meter-long wooden box. "Han Solo," she said, smiling down at him, "we want you to have this." Han's brows knitted. He set the box down on the stool and unlatched its finely wrought metal clasp. Inside, snug in a bed of cushioning material, was a beautifully carved bowcaster, its marked and blemished skeleton stock polished to a deep brown gleam. An artfully disguised magnetic accelerator, the weapon propelled explosive quarrels at extremely high speeds. This one was equipped with a sighting scope and a recocking mechanism few human hands would be capable of operating. "I recognize this," Han said, nodding. He compressed his lips to trap a moan fighting to escape him. "It's one of the first I ever saw him make." Mala hooted. "Chewbacca fashioned it shortly after we married, while you were here. He fashioned better versions in his time, but this one retains the warmth and power of him." Han hefted the weapon. "I feel it." He turned and hugged Mala, his head barely reaching her chin. "I'll treasure it." Waru handed Han a carry pouch made of hide. "This also belonged to my father. I know he would have wanted you to have it." Han placed the curve-bottomed pouch over his shoulder, knowing full well that it would hang down past his knees. Mala, Waru, Lobaka, and the rest boomed their delight in ear-splitting yowls. Jaina returned with a plate of food in time to join in the laughter. "If Chewie could see you now," she said, grinning for the first time all day. Han backhanded a tear from his left eye, smiled, and put his arm around his daughter's waist. The big lug would bust a gut. Jaudril, Chewbacca's chestnut-colored female cousin, growled something to Mala that Han didn't catch. Seeing Han's inquisitive expression, Mala explained. "Jaudril is wondering when you and your family will be returning to Coruscant." Han and Jaina traded shrugs. "I hadn't thought about it," Han said. "Tomorrow sometime, I suppose." Jaudril lowed in elaboration. "I ask only because Drianta and I need a small measure of time to prepare." Han's features mirrored his bewilderment. "Prepare for what? Are you coming to Coruscant with us?" Chewbacca's father, a titchit cuck, yawped in a meaningful way. "Jaudril and Drianta are arranging the feast for Waru and Lobaka's farewell." "Waru and Lobaka," Han said nervously. "They will be assuming Chewbacca's life debt." Han's jaw came unhinged. He glanced from one Wookiee to the next in rising dismay. But you can't. Chewie's dead. All debts are off." A titchit cuck issued a sustained bass register growl. "Death may have extinguished my son's defiant flame, but our debt to you continues until yours is extinguished." Her lower lip between her teeth, Jaina placed a comforting hand on her father's arm, only to have it shrugged off. Han was shaking his head back and forth. "No, no, I can't accept this. Chewie saved my life 10 times over. He died saving Anakin's life." His agitation increased as he spoke. "Besides, I'm the one who owes all of you a life debt." He cut his eyes to the dark brown son of Dulan Amapia. Your mother was kinder to me than my own. He searched out Gorlin. Your husband, Salporin, gave his life protecting Leia from Nogri assassins. He appealed to Jow Drill and Drianta. Your cousin Shalron died aboard the Pride of Yavitha, saving me. As you would have died for them, a Tichit Cuck rumbled, nearly showing his fangs. A life debt is just that. Mala, too, was glowering at Han. You would not defame Chewbacca's memory by refusing to allow his debt to be honored. Jaina swallowed audibly. Dad doesn't mean any dishonor. She glanced at her father. Right, Dad? Han stared at her, mouth still ajar. Mala's vibrato growl had summoned a memory of a day following the wedding when Han had tried to persuade Chewie into remaining behind with his bride rather than accompanying him back to Nar Shaddaa. He thought, too, of Groznik, a Wookiee who had attached himself to the rogue squadron pilot Elskal Loro, wife of a man named Throm, to whom Groznik was life-debted. Right, he said at last, looking from Jaina to Mala. I'd cut off my arm before I'd dishonor Chewie's memory in any way. You know that. It's just that... Everyone waited. It's just that I'm not ready. He shook his head as if to clear it, then looked up at a Tichit Cuck and the others. Chewie's still alive for me. I can't just allow him to be replaced. You've got to understand that. He was more than a protector. He was my closest friend. The Wookiees exchanged sympathetic looks and indecipherable brays. He clings to his memory of my husband, Mala remarked sadly. He needs time, a Tichit Cuck growled, somehow without making it sound menacing. That's it, Han said, grasping at straws. I just need time. After what seemed an eternity, Chewbacca's father nodded his huge head. Then time will grant you. The life debt involves more than simply providing shelter from bodily harm. It suckers the spirit as well. Han saw the truth of it. I want that to go on. Mala put her huge paws on his shoulders. Then it shall.